Welcome to Self-Compassionate Professor, a career wellness podcast for mid-career and recovering academics who want more. More meaning, balance, rest, joy, and more clarity. Our motto here is no regrets. So glad you're here. Hello, hello. Welcome. This is episode 174, and I'm Danielle Delamar. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Kara Jones, which you'll be able to hear from in just a minute. I just so appreciate Kara's candidness. And at the end of this interview, she says something like, I hope it's going to help someone out there. And I say something like, yeah, I believe it will. And actually, I have no doubt that this conversation is going to help people out there. If you feel sort of shaken by this conversation, you know, kind of like a jolt of lightning just struck through your body, you know, just this real feeling of aliveness, of feeling understood, like Kara's story is your story, right? All of those things. This is the reason I do this podcast, right? So that we can feel a sense of community, so that we can feel a sense that we're not alone, right? Because it feels really good to know that others are struggling similarly to you, right? It feels really good to know that your feelings are actually totally valid, right? And to hear someone else tell your story with language you've never been able to fully capture yourself, it's really powerful. And for me, I think Kara's story most resonates in that I too see myself as a healer. I too see my work as a calling. And sometimes I feel like I'm the only one who feels that way, right? And I'm grateful that Kara articulated that for me in this interview. And before we get to Kara, I have an ask. Will you go on and leave a review for the podcast? If you're somebody who's really gotten a lot out of the content and you appreciate it, I want to ask if you'll just pause right here and now and go leave a review. Just so you don't forget, just do it right now. This podcast is a lot of work and it's also a labor of love, and I want to do it. I care about it. But I also need your help, right? I need your help so that I can expand listenership. I need people to be able to find the podcast. And I know there are people out there who would very much benefit from the work I'm doing here, but they're not being reached because I really don't have very many reviews on the podcast. And the more reviews we have, the greater the chance it is that people will find us. So if you could just hop on, especially if you love the show, and just give me a 5-star review, I would greatly appreciate it. All right. And now I will introduce you to Dr. Kara Jones. Thank you so much for joining the conversation today. I am talking to Dr. Kara Jones, Associate Professor of Women and Gender Studies and IFS Practitioner. I know, you know, we've been in touch for a while now, and I've talked to you at some moments where things weren't great and talked to you at some moments where you were seeing sort of the light. And you have said to me that you're willing to talk about your career journey in every way, the good, the bad, the ugly. And where are you now in your career journey? Is there like a metaphor or something that you would use to describe where you are? What's going on?
Oh, I don't know that I have a metaphor handy, but I like that question. I am in a very busy season in terms of my career, and it's a season of, maybe season might be my metaphor. It's a season of coming out of what I hope is the hardest of it, but not being at the end point yet. So it's like this transitional part, like where you're like, you know, those in between season moments where it's like winter one day and summer the next and fall the next, and it kind of keeps doing that. That's kind of how it feels like. And maybe all seasons will happen all at once in the course of like 5 minutes, kind of like that.
I love that. That's a great metaphor.
Yeah. Do you want me to be more specific about what that looks like for me?
I would love that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was awarded tenure a minute ago, sometime back in April, maybe. So I got tenure, and I also have been really struggling with academia for a long time, since I was in graduate school. And I'm also on a trajectory towards where I'm being called to go, but it is not yet fully, I'm not in that life yet. I'm like heading towards that life and I'm living it, but I'm also still living this tenured track, now tenured professor life. And so there's many threads that I'm weaving together, and it can be quite a chaotic jumble sometimes of navigating all of these different parts of my life.
Okay, so you are a tenured professor doing all the work a tenured professor would do, and you've been called to go somewhere else. And I guess that's the IFC practitioner part, or IFS, sorry, practitioner part. So what, first of all, is an IFS practitioner, so that we can get kind of a sense? And I know that's like a big question.
Yeah.
Let's get a sense there, and then we'll see where this goes after we hear.
Yeah. So IFS is it stands for Internal Family Systems, and it's a model of psychotherapy that has the assumption that we are all multiple. We're not just the kind of mono-mind singular self. So the idea is that there are different parts of ourselves that have different ideas. So for example, there's a part of me that is my professor part. In fact, there's many professor parts of me that do my professor parts. And then there's other parts in my system that are, in IFS, we say polarized with those professor parts that are like, this is not working out for us very well. This is not what we're meant to be doing. And so in IFS, what we learn to do as practitioners or psychotherapists, if you're a licensed psychotherapist, is you learn how to be with your own internal family system. So these different parts. So the idea is that the internal world, if we go inwards, it operates much like an external family. So it's a systems approach to our lives, our psyche, our body. And we learn to be with our own parts and to facilitate other people being with the parts of themselves and getting the wisdom that these different parts bring, and really kind of taking care of our inner worlds in order to kind of make the changes we want in our outer worlds, or to help heal emotional or mental distress, to help heal. I've used it a lot in my personal life to help heal from chronic illness. And it's really an expansive and beautiful model. And I could probably talk about that the whole time. But in short, a practitioner is someone who helps people work with the different parts of themselves and, you know, trusting. I'll say one more thing about this, because one of the things that really brought me to IFS, is this idea that all of these different parts of ourselves, no matter how harmful they are in our external lives, and this is like, these can be extreme parts of ourselves that do extreme behaviors, that if you can connect with it, the part of you that does this thing, whatever it is, you find that its intent for the system is always good. It's always trying to help the person in some way, even if it, you know, on the outside, it's destroying their lives. And so you have this, you know, unconditional positive regard for the parts. So in IFS, a lot of people say, you know, all parts are welcome. Maybe not necessarily all behaviors are welcome, but the parts that do the behaviors are welcome. And we really get to know them with a lot of curiosity.
Okay. So I guess what I'm curious about is you talked about IFS being this expansive, beautiful model. And I remember the conversation we had a little while ago where you said you were just so drawn to your new work. And you cared so much about it. You even said earlier in this conversation that it's almost like a calling. And I'm wondering sort of what one, if that's still true, and two, what it feels like to be in your professor role in juxtaposition.
So what it feels like is that, yes, it still feels very true that it feels like a calling. And I'm still working out the details of what that calling looks like in terms of, so I do have a private coaching practice right now where I do work with folks in the IFS model and I help them to get to know their parts around whatever issue they want to bring to me. It feels like my entire physiology changes when I'm engaged in IFS work. When I'm in my professor role, in order to make it, I'm going to use a word here that might seem extreme, but it is my experience. In order to make it survivable for me, which is just how it feels to my system, I am trying to bring in some aspects of IFS in my teaching and my work with students, at least. But when I'm engaging in any way with academia, my parts feel, or my system just feels in crisis. I don't know how else to say it. Everything just happens so fast and is so intense. There's a lot of anxious energy and a lot of demands and a lot of things are happening all at once that aren't felt, if that makes sense. There's not time in academia to feel the impact of what's happening because it's just an endless list of to-dos, and that just burnt me out quite severely. And coming back to IFS has been coming back to claiming my felt sense and allowing things to be in my body. And that's where a lot of the healing has taken place. Like, I'm able to slow things down, really slow them down, really feel the impact. And we need these energetic and emotional components of our lives to make sense of our lives. To like, our emotions help us know where to go. And I felt like in academia, I never have time. The only emotions I experienced were, you know, despair, anxiety, panic, terror, anger. I mean, those are just the main ones. That's the juxtaposition between the two for me.
Okay. And I'm curious how you have, because I just heard you talk about, you know, in academia, things are moving too fast. There's no way to sort of process everything. There's no way to slow down enough to really feel into everything. Yet you've also said, you know, I've been able to use this system to really take care of myself in different ways. And so I'm wondering how you're using IFS in an environment that feels like it's sort of, I don't know, not, what's the word I'm looking for? Not open to sort of a felt sense of being.
Yeah, I have constructed very intense boundaries around my academic work because the impact of me of this work is severe. So I have to have a lot of boundaries around engaging. I don't really talk to colleagues about any of this. Basically I try to do my work with as much integrity as possible. But I also, just try to limit the amount of time I spend in that I mean, I'm really talking about different nervous system states here. Like I'm talking, like for me, being in academia is a survival state that I'm in, and it feels relentless and it can bleed out into my life outside of academia. So I've spent years learning how to disengage and set boundaries. So I make it very clear to my students when I am and I'm not available via email. Just little things like that. I was going to talk about something else, but yeah, I think that answers the question.
Yeah. And if you have something that's alive for you right now, feel free to say.
Well, I was going to say that it, like the physical and emotional and mental crisis was so bad that I had to take the entire fall semester last fall on medical leave. Like I could not engage with my work at all, and returning back was horrible. I don't even have words for, like, it felt like I was being tortured. And I've had to carve a lot of space for myself to do the things that make it feel like I'm able to, the words I have, you can edit these out, but the words I have is stay on the planet, essentially. And part of that is learning how to navigate the extreme emotional states that my work puts me into, and teasing that out from, you know, past trauma and just doing all the trauma work and all of that. And also just realizing that this is not an environment that I can thrive in. And it has been a long grieving process for me, because I did think academia was the thing for me for a long time.
Okay. And I remember when we did have a conversation last time, you sort of talking about academia being like that container that holds your trauma. And I'm also thinking about what you said about, you know, it's this relationship you've had with academia has been difficult since grad school. And I'm wondering if you're willing to talk a little bit about sort of the trauma and how it manifests and how maybe you've healed it at this point, to what degree. Anything in that I would love to hear about. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I have a distinct memory, many of them, but this one visual comes to me of, I grew up in an abusive household. And I have this memory of me being in high school, and some abuse had happened, and I had no support around any of it. So I was just on my own. And I was in my room, and there were two things I would do to cope with what was happening in my home. One of them, and this is not related to academia, one of them is I would take everything in my room and throw it into a pile in the middle of my room, just everything. And then I would rearrange all the furniture and every other thing in the room, and then meticulously put everything back in a new place. So I'd like literally rearrange the space I lived in, and throw out some stuff. So I would do this like cleansing, purging process. But the other thing I would do, that took hours and tons of energy, so I just couldn't always do that. The other thing I would do is I remember sitting there and forcing myself to do schoolwork. And that became a channel for me to all of these swirling thoughts and feelings and physical sensations and emotions, and impulses and urges that I couldn't do anything with. I would force myself to perfect my chemistry homework or whatever I was working on. And that became, it was the one thing where I aligned with my parents' values. They were proponents of public education. It was the one thing I could do to get a sense of approval from them. And I just channeled everything, all the rage and the hurt and the terror and everything that I had in my body into like being the best student ever. Mm-hmm. And so for a while I went around talking about academics and being like, oh, these are people who just overdevelop their, you know, rational thinking, analyzing, judging, critical faculties to the neglect of their emotional parts, which may be true, I don't know, of everybody, but it was true for me, I think. And I kind of made a blanket statement about everyone, and I think there's something to that. And I try not to do that as best I can in my classes. I try to bring in the whole person as best I can in the institutional context that I've worked in. But it doesn't feel like an environment where somebody's whole self for me is welcomed and celebrated unless it's in service of larger institutional goals. So this, I'm going into different places now, but I'll leave it at that, I think.
Okay. I guess I'm curious. I resonate with what you're saying, just in my own experience, just in terms of not feeling like everything is welcome in certain environments in academia. And I'm wondering if you're willing to give us an example of a place, you know, whether it's a classroom, a faculty meeting, whatever, where you really do have to suppress certain parts and it becomes really hard.
The word suppression is great because that is, in IFS, we say that we have three kinds of parts in general. We have what's called firefighters that leap into action and do all the destructive things in our lives once a strong emotion is triggered. We have exiles, which are the ones that hold the strong emotions that we don't want triggered at any point. And then the third part we have are the managers who proactively try to avoid any triggering. And my manager parts are so strong. They suppress everything in myself, in my body. Like my whole body is locked down, is clenched. Like I've had frozen shoulders. I have multiple chronic illnesses because of how much suppression I have to do. So I do this suppression pretty much everywhere. Faculty meetings, just any part of academia that I'm in, this is happening. I try my best to not do this in my role as instructor, except so in the classroom, I mean, I definitely have teaching parts that come in and take over, but I really try to create a space where we're really attentive to interpersonal dynamics. I really try to make as best I can a process-based space. But I'm in an institutional context that's evaluative, that's judgmental, that's critical. Like that's what I have to do is increase their skills, get them, you know, to think in a certain way. And so I have to suppress all the parts of me that recoil in order to grade, in order to, I don't feel like I'm being clear. I'm going to say this. One of the things I started feeling maybe 5 or 6 years ago, especially, is that I would look out into my classroom of students, so a classroom of like maybe 45 students, and I'm teaching about issues of, you know, gender and race and ethnicity and sexuality and you know, really kind of in social class and disability. I do a lot in disability and health studies. So I'm really talking about things that are like people's visceral lived experiences. And I'm in a classroom with 45 people and I'm looking at all of them and all I'm seeing is their trauma. I can see it in them. And I'm thinking, as I'm talking about this stuff, as I'm lecturing or we're having a discussion, I'm watching people getting triggered and suppressing it. And I believe in the value of education. I deeply do. But I'm like, what am I with myself? I'm like, I don't care so much about how well you're writing your thesis statement or how well you can analyze this article. Because I feel like there's so much trauma here, there's so much pain, and it's coming out. I'm getting disclosures of sexual assault and violence and abuse and lived experiences of racism and all of this stuff. And I'm like, it just didn't feel right to me to keep doing that, I guess. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's my experience.
I would love to just name sort of how powerful that was for me to hear you describe it in that way. And just this, like, I'm seeing all of their trauma and it in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, so this is like there's all this trauma coming out and there's no real place for it to go because as professor, that's not my role. Does that land?
Yes. And yet it's coming out because I'm seeing it. They're feeling that I'm seeing it. And suddenly, and this happens in a lot of women's and gender studies context, like it starts to feel like group therapy, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things I've been trained to think and say for a long time is like, well, I'm not a therapist. Like, if you're having an issue, like, let me walk you over to the counseling center, which is understaffed. And as I've heard from some students, and this is not particular to any institutional context I've worked at, it's like all of them, students don't always get their needs met there either. But yet I got into this field because of my own trauma, my own experience with, you know, violent, oppressive patriarchy that I lived in growing up, to put it in those terms. And I feel it's important to understand these systems, but for me, it's not just an intellectual exercise. It's a whole embodied thing. And so my role as professor, like, I can't manage the pain in the room, the content I'm teaching, and the evaluation I have to do, and the lives that my students live. Like, it's just too much to hold. And in order to do my job, I have to cut off parts of it, of myself and of what I'm able to provide in terms of insight and support, because I can't manage it. It's just way too much to hold all of this. And I did not like the cutting off parts of myself part, because the parts that get cut off are what I think are the most important parts. You have to cut off your humanity to some extent in order to process that number of students through the classes. And because I couldn't sit with student after student after student as they grapple with these things in their personal lives. Like, I'm finite, right? And so I couldn't engage with their writing and their written content the way I wanted to. It's just, and everything in academia teaches you to push all of that off because that's not important. And I was coming up, against my own limits, my own physical, emotional limits of like, I can't do it. And that was really hard for me. It's still hard. There's just not enough support or value in what we do. And everything is about scarcity, and we've got to increase class sizes and get more students through and get them to finish in 4 years, and all this external pressure that's just, I struggle to navigate.
I want to know how you process it when it's over. Like, so you've got your boundaries, maybe you've just gone to class and now you've got to sort of be with the stuff that came up in class. Do you process it, or do you just say, you know, that's not something, that's sort of not my job in this context? How do you manage that?
So for years, I just vented to anyone who was willing to listen. Like, my poor therapist that I worked with for all those years, like, I had no space to do any of my own work because I would just vent and vent and vent about work. And I did learn that venting is not actually helpful. It just kind of kept me stuck. I used to be able to exercise. I used to run, and like things like that would help me just get it out of my body. I lost that ability through chronic illness. I don't have a lot of capacity for a lot of physical activity anymore. I do have to process things with people. So sometimes colleagues, sometimes friends, although I do find as academics, sometimes it's like you get together at a group of friends and you just end up complaining about work the whole time. And it's just, I so want out of that. I want to talk about other things. Things that I've been doing that have been the most helpful are just focusing on my own personal healing, which to parts of me feels so self-indulgent because I see the suffering in the world. But I'm also like, I was not going to survive if I didn't. And so a lot of that is really mundane, everyday self-care. So I'm training right now as a trauma recovery coach as well. And just doing whatever very basic levels of self-care I'm able to do in terms of, like little nervous system things, little, you know, yoga nidra practice, or if I feel very activated, jumping on the trampoline for 2 minutes, I do as much as I can at home. So I try to teach as many classes as they'll allow me on Zoom. because it gives me a lot of boundaries. I'm not walking into the soup on campus of trauma, and try to just, you know, maintain my own practices that help me come back to myself and stay centered. So that's what I try to do.
Yeah. And I'm wondering about the chronic illness piece. Are you connecting that at all to the challenges you've faced in not being able to be fully yourself in your career?
Yeah, I mean, so I blame academia, which is, you know, blames its own thing, but I do. So I've dealt with chronic illness since I was young, like a child. I mean, I'll just give an example. This is a very personal example. It feels a little strange to me. I mean, my research is on endometriosis, so, you know, that's something that I've lived with since I've been 13. But academia has not helped. And so, for example, I went through an extremely early menopause in my 30s, and I think it's because of the chronic toxic stress that I was under. I have accumulated more and more diagnoses over the years. I mean, I wrote a blog post about it. Someplace I have a post-it note that has like, I don't know, it's like approaching 15 or 20 diagnoses at this point. And I think a lot of that is just chronic nervous system dysregulation, which is, you know, my own personal trauma is part of it, but I do find academia for me has been a major part of my family of origin trauma that I have basically, I've re-experienced it in academia. So I've reenacted that trauma throughout my career. And I remember my first year at the job I'm currently in, and this isn't necessarily to pinpoint this institution because I've had major surgeries. You can only schedule them during winter breaks or summer breaks, like all these things. But I remember my first year here, after the first semester, my partner would blow up an air mattress and put it in the backyard because that's where I would exist on the weekends. That's all I could do is go to work and lay in the backyard when I wasn't at work. I had no capacity to do anything else. And it's like everything in my life had been taken from me except for work and recovering from work. And I'm still working with that to regain more capacity.
Do you find that working with IFS clients helps you to heal? Does it help with that sort of recovering from your professor work?
Yep, it does. It's this really, I've been called into a healing role for years. I mean, this is a little bit of a different topic, but I've been called like through dreams. I had an experience where I helped my grandmother transition from, you know, she passed, and I went back to the East Coast and helped her through that and felt very strongly called to doing different, more spiritual or emotional work. And working with clients, so there's this thing in IFS that they call the healing agent in IFS is actually a thing they call self-energy. And so as a practitioner, you learn how to access your self energy. And this is this core of yourself that is, I mean, they have 8 C's and 5 P's to remember it by, but essentially it's who you are at your core. And it's remarkably similar. It looks different in different people because of who we are, but there's a lot of similar qualities of like calmness and curiosity and playfulness and persistence and courageousness. There's a whole bunch of, just a lot of spaciousness. And so in order to do IFS work, you have to move from that self energy, and you're connecting your self energy to the client's self energy to help them connect to their parts, essentially. It's amazing. We go some really deep places into people's lives, but the theory, and so far I've found this to be very true, and I've worked with IFS on and off. Like I first had a therapist try to work with me in it back in 2014 for 3 years. And I was a terrible client because I, She would be like, oh, so a part of you feels this way. And I would be like, no, all of me feels this way, as does my entire ancestral line. So, like, I don't know what you're talking about, a part of me. I've gotten better since then. But I forgot what I was saying now. But
self-energy. Yeah.
Self-energy. It's a container that can hold anything once you can access it. And the client doesn't have to ever access it. I mean, my job is to help them do that. But as a practitioner, if I'm accessing it, that self-energy can hold anything. And I've had experiences, not just in one-on-one client work, but teaching or just different life experiences where that's shown up for me, where really hard things are happening and something comes in. And I'm like, I can hold this. I can hold this. And that's what I do. I see my role as an IFS practitioner as a guide to someone's, helping them guide themselves in their own system. And we all need other people to help us hold the hard things. Like when we're dealing with the exiles, the traumatized parts of us, I think it's very few people that could do that on their own. I'm sure there are some people out there. I don't know them. and yeah, but doing this work, I can hold what's here because I can slow it down to like the pace it needs to move at. And my only external constraint, I mean, there's the clock, but I know how to manage a clock after being in academia for so long. Like, so there's no really, that it's just whatever the client system needs. My self-energy is able to meet that as best it can. I mean, I'm not perfect, but I have parts that come in, but you know, I can really work in that sort of liminal space. I've also trained as an end-of-life doula. I haven't practiced it, but I trained as one, and I find it, the work quite similar of how to, it's just holding space, essentially.
There's so much you've just said that I want to ask questions about. And at the moment, I'm just kind of reeling with all these different sort of images and thoughts. And
oh gosh, I have this effect on people. I'm sorry.
No, I love it. It's very inspiring. I am sort of drawn to the self energy as a way to heal. And I'm wondering, when you're in like a really tough place, you're in sort of work recovery, professor work recovery, how you tap into the self energy.
Yeah. And what I've learned through this is that if I want to do this for a living, is that my entire life has to change. Because my nervous system is so dysregulated through my academic work, and some things happening in my personal life, that it's very difficult. And so I have a set of practices that I do that signal essentially I'm now shifting into this practitioner mode. And for me, this is a very sacred role that I've been given, and I honor it as such. And I have certain practices that I use in order to signal to myself that this is what we're doing now. And so some of those are music, movement, different things like that, that I try to give a little buffer before I step into that role, where I clear my space kind of energetically, the space I'm going to be in. And some of it is really mundane. Like, I'll look at the client's notes from previous sessions, like, where were we? But I do this, I really do this with an element of holding this as sacred. And anything that gets me into that and shifts me out of the day-to-day routine of, you know, the dogs barking and dinner has to be made and, you know, all the things that happen in life. And I think that would look different for different people, what that might be, but whatever for me taps me into a sense of asking for something that's bigger than me to hold me in this work, and feeling into that, has so far seems to go pretty well.
And the word spacious really resonates with me when you talk about getting into the sacred space. And then the other word that's coming to mind, and I don't know how this lands with you, I'm curious to know, is a sense of timelessness.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and that, I feel like I could talk for hours about that. Like that, I'm really glad you picked up on that, because time moves differently. Like if I'm doing academic work, the whole day will fly by and I feel like I've gotten nothing done. Like it feels like all the time, like my email's going and I'm responding to everything and I'm doing a million things, but it's very hard to do the things I need to do. Whereas once I step into the IFS space, and I just got out of a 4-day training, I was a program assistant. So I was on the training team and it was like, these were like 10, 11 hour days for the trainers that we were putting in. But there's almost like time slows down and you can, it's held very differently. So like a 50 minute client session, I have no agenda. The agenda is I'm going to open up and see what comes up in this space and trust it and follow it and trust that I can meet it and that the person can meet it. And so it's less focused on what we need to do, where we need to go, and trusting that things kind of unfold or open when you're in that space. And like, I just want to live in that space all the time.
Okay, so I know we only have a few minutes because you have a client coming, but I do want to see if there's anything you want to make sure that that you say to complete our conversation.
Yeah, just that I talked with someone recently who left academia and is in sort of the mental health professions. And kind of what I learned from them and what I'm feeling for myself is like, you know, there's this part, and this is the point where I'm at right now, where you're kind of doing it all at once and you just have to get through that part. And then eventually you get to do the thing you're meant to be doing or you're wanting to be doing. I don't know. It's possible and it's hard.
Yeah. I'm thinking about the trust piece. I can trust that things will unfold as they will. I can be in this sort of timeless, spacious space. And I kind of want to be there all the time, I think is what you said. And do you see that the trajectory forward as you sort of begin to close the doors on your professor job and move more into this trauma work? Do you sort of have a vision that that you're going to be feeling that way more often than not?
Yeah, that's my hope. What I find in this work is that I don't have to make things happen. I have to make things happen constantly in my academic life. I have to force them to happen. I have to control and work towards outcomes and a lot of manager parts, exerting a ton of effort. Things in this IFS work for me have just unfolded. It's like they spill out almost faster than I can keep up with them. Like we don't have time to get into the, like, and I don't know how I feel about the ideas of like synchronicity and all of that, but that's what it's felt like. It's like something's unfolding in front of me and I'm just like, oh, okay, I guess I'll go for it. Sure. And there's not, I don't have to make it happen. And it is hard to keep that trust because I'm, you know, in academia, we're constantly pushing and pushing and doing more and forcing things to happen. So I know how to work in that mode. But it's like the more I can surrender, the more can kind of happen. And I guess just, it sounds to some parts of me that are well-trained, like ridiculous to say, but I don't know what else I can do but say that I guess I just have to trust in it and hope for the best.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Thank you so much, Kara. I need to ask you before we go about your coaching, people who feel called to this work, want to understand their parts better, want to heal, how can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, they could go to my website. It's integratingscatteredparts.com, and you can see a little bit about me and what I offer. Right now, I just do some one-on-one client sessions. I'm hoping to offer some group experiences at some point when I have some time to feel into that and develop it. But yeah, they can contact me through that page and we can set up a discovery call and see if they think I can be helpful to them.
Cool. Thank you so much, Kara. It was such a pleasure. I really appreciate the honesty and the transparency and all the sort of openness, especially when you're still in very much in your professor job. I really appreciate that. How did it feel to you to talk so honestly about it?
It just feels right. Like, it feels really good to have had this space, and I really appreciate you having me on here and just giving me the opportunity to tell my story or parts of it, and just, yeah, hopefully it helps someone somewhere, somehow.
Yeah, I believe it will. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Self-Compassionate Professor. Email me at Danielle@selfcompassionateprofessor.com. And for those of you who are committed to finding career wellness, I invite you to join the sabbatical program. We're a group of academics who normalize rest, play, and feeling whole. We make career decisions from that place. Find out more at selfcompassionateprofessor.com.